This is Tech Central's Talk Central podcast, brought to you by BlackBerry. Welcome to the first edition of Talk Central for 2011. My name is Duncan McLeod. I'm here with Tech Central's deputy editor, Candace Jones. Hi, Candace.
Happy New Year, Duncan.
Happy New Year to you too.
Good to be back.
Thought it was going to be a slow start this week, start to the year like it usually is, but certainly at Tech Central, I don't know about the other tech websites, but certainly here it's been very, very busy indeed.
Definitely been a good start to the year.
So yeah, I think there are two main stories which we're going to focus on in this episode of Talk Central. The first is local loop unbundling, which I think is going to be one of the big stories of 2011, with you know, Communications Minister Roy Padiachi. Roy Padiachi having set the deadline of November 2011 for ICASA to get this done. So it's going to be a story that runs throughout the year, but there have been some big developments on that this week. And then I want to spend most of the second part of the show talking about digital terrestrial television standards. We're finally seeing some interesting movements on that front, and hopefully that isn't going to be one of the big stories of 2011 if all goes well. We've got some other bits and pieces we're going to touch on a bit later in the show, but let's get kicked off with the local loop unbundling story. And Candace, you've been running a series of these on Tech Central over the last couple of months, and some really, really interesting developments this week. First, you chatted to Telkom to get their views on the situation, and they warned that they don't believe the November deadline is feasible. But then you had a fascinating interview yesterday with one of the ICASA councillors, in fact, the ICASA councillor who's going to be heading up this local loop unbundling process, Thabo Makake. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. And he's told you some very, very interesting things indeed. Tell us more about that.
Well, absolutely, Duncan. The regulator has a really interesting view on how it plans to unbundle the local loop. And the start of that actually happened last year, sort of under the covers, when they released the regulations for facilities leasing. Coupled with the Electronic Communications Act, facilities leasing regulations basically allows any operator access already to the local loop.
Now, just to explain the terminology here, when telecommunications operators and regulators talk about facilities, they're talking about telecommunications infrastructure.
It's essential infrastructure that most operators will need to run a business or to reach the retail customer.
So like undersea cables, like the local loop,
yes,
things that are judged to be key national points or national
infrastructure assets. But at the end of the day, facilities are defined in the Electronic Communications Act as practically any technology or infrastructure used for the access to telecoms infrastructure.
But basically what ICAS has told you is in your interview with them is that under the facilities leasing guidelines or regulations, any licensed operator, and remember there are hundreds of these now, because after the LTIC judgment in 2008, the market was effectively opened up, and we have hundreds of what are called ECNS or network licensees. So what ICASA is effectively saying is that internet service providers, anyone with a network license, can apply to have access to Telkom's local loop to provide services over that last mile of copper into people's homes that Telkom currently will continue to own. This is a huge development because it effectively means that anyone with a license can get access to Telkom's infrastructure. Well, this is what ICASA is saying. My guess is from reading what you've written about this is that ICASA is hoping that companies are actually going to challenge this issue and they want to test it legally to see if it's going to work or whether they're going to have to develop additional regulations to deal with LLU, local loop unbundling.
That's definitely the feeling I get, and we may get that challenge sooner than expected. Yesterday, we also discovered that Neotel has requested from Telkom access to the local loop to provide...
In terms of these regulations?
Yes, specifically in terms of the facilities leasing regulations. And according to Neotel, Telkom has declined them access. The quote I got was, politely said no. So we want to see how that plays out now, and hopefully Neotel will take that on more aggressively, and we can see whether or not ICASA's plans will actually play out well.
Yes, so Neotel, we could become sort of the test case, Neotel versus Telkom on local loop unbundling. It could become the sort of... really are the test case for whether these regulations can be used or whether ICASA is going to have to look at at something developing a completely separate set of regulations for unbundling?
Well, what I think will happen now is that whether or not this process goes through, ICASA will still take on some sort of regulatory intervention. So what the regulator is looking at doing is putting together a document that will outline exactly what elements belong to the local loop and exactly what other operators can request from Telkom and how they can go about getting access to that. So I think that's basically where the regulator is at the moment, pushing through using the regulations, the facility leasing regulations, which is a really good plan because it avoids a lot of unnecessary hassles, specifically avoids one of the sections in the Electronic Communications Act, which forces the regulator to do massive market research on exactly how much control Telkom has over the local loop, which is pretty obvious, you know, that it owns the entire local loop. So it avoids that kind of thing, and it would speed up the process and will help meet the deadline, which Minister reiterated last year, which would be November 2011.
Yeah, which has been the deadline all along. I mean, it's the deadline that was set by Vimatsepe Kasaburi when she first announced that the local loop would be unbundled.
2006, I think.
Yeah, it was a long time ago, and there was a research report that was produced at the time, and I think there's a lot of sort of learnings that ICASA can take, I think, especially from the British example. In fact, you mentioned in your article that Thabo Makaki, the ICASA councillor, said to you that he's hearing is that Telkom is even considering the option of spinning off the local loop into a separate company, pretty much like the BT Group in the UK did with its local loop when it created the Open Reach company.
Well, I think BT said the same thing. You can look at Telkom now and its restructuring process, and it already has Telkom Wholesale as a separate division. There is every possibility that Telkom could spin that off. I mean, it is an inevitability, and I think Telkom understands that the local loop will have to be made available. And I think they're just preparing for that possibility.
Mm. Yeah, I don't think this is going to be as easy a process as ICASA perhaps is hoping it's going to be.
not with the legal muscle inside Telkom.
I was about to say, not with Telkom's legal lawyers involved, no. But
Telkom will definitely challenge it. I mean, globally, every incumbent has challenged local loop unbundling. Mm. And already Telkom says that the local loop, or at least Telkom's version of the local loop, should not be considered an essential facility.
What encourages me one of the things that encourages me about that ICASA may get this right is the fact that Thabo Makaki is also the councillor who led the whole wholesale call termination rates issue, which I think in the end was very well regulated and well done. It's the same team of people at ICASA who are looking at the local loop unbundling issue. So I think it's a strong team. So I think ICASA has certainly come in for some well-deserved, frankly, criticism in the past for some of the regulations they've produced, but I have confidence in the team that's looking into this issue. So let's hope that everything is sorted out by November, and that Telkom is in fact wrong when it says that there is no chance that the local loop can be unbundled by then.
Well, having spoken to Thabo yesterday, I have to agree with you, Duncan. He's a strong character, and he has all the knowledge on his shoulders that he needs to proceed with this process. And I think that they've got it right so far. So far, so good. But I think the ultimate test will come if Neotel actually takes its complaints to the regulator.
Even if Neotel doesn't go through doesn't file a formal complaint with ICASA, I've got no doubt that one of the internet service providers will do so. Perhaps MWeb, perhaps someone else. One of these guys is really keen for the local loop to be unbundled so that they can start to bring down broadband prices in the fixed line environment. So if Neotel doesn't do it, someone else is going to do it. So there will be a test case very soon to really sort of determine whether the facilities leasing regulations are sufficient to do the whole local loop unbundling process.
Well, it'll be interesting. It's definitely going to be something to watch over the next couple of weeks, something to keep a very close tab on. Telkom obviously has a lot riding on stalling the process in terms of getting in as much money as they can before they have to give up on the local loop. But at the end of the day, I don't see Telkom losing all that much, since if it does follow the same route as BT, it might have to charge itself for access to that exchange, and But it will also have more money for maintenance, and it will have also rent, more money on rentals.
Mm.
So definitely, you know, at the, its resistance is a little bit worrying and a little bit unnecessary.
Mm. But yeah, I mean, as you say, incumbents all over the world have fought this issue. It's almost a knee-jerk thing, I think. they, you know, they stand to lose billions of rand through this process. So they will fight it. The extent to which they fight it, I think, will be determined by the extent to which the Minister of Communications leans on them and says, "Do not fight this. This is inevitable. You will do this," which mm-hmm. they, which the minister can do, given that by virtue of the fact that he, that government is a large shareholder in Telkom, they can exercise some degree of influence at the company.
Well, we'll have to see how tough a stance the minister takes on the company in terms of local loop unbundling.
Mm-hmm. Right. The other big story this week, which I'm keen to get into, is digital terrestrial television standards, which obviously we've been covering on Tech Central in some detail for the past year and a half. I think, you know, we're finally starting to see some clarity. Earlier this week, we broke a very important story on Tech Central about the fact that Cabinet has, in fact, endorsed a SADC task team recommendation that South Africa adopt the second generation of the European standard for digital terrestrial television. I know that's quite a mouthful, but if you'll recall, a regular listener to this podcast and readers of the website will know that that there's been a huge furore over the past year or so over which standard the country will adopt for digital TV. Back in 2006, just to give a bit of history, South Africa with SADC, the Southern African Development Community, the region, the economic bloc of Southern African countries, agreed with the International Telecommunications Union, which is an arm or an agency of the United Nations that handles telecommunications policy and regulatory issues, that the country will adopt what was then the first generation of the European standard known as DVB-T. Centec, the state-owned broadcast signal distributor, as well as the commercial broadcasters, are already fairly far down the line in rolling out digital television based on the European standard. Then around April last year, the then Director General in the Department of Communications, Mamadupi Motlala, as you know, has moved on under interesting circumstances in the interim. She called a colloquium in Midrand to revisit and discuss whether the country should in fact still be committed to the European standard or should be considering some other standard. To cut a long story short, basically, there was a lot of lobbying that took place by firstly the Brazilians and then the Japanese, who both use a similar standard known as ISDBT. It's a competitor standard to the European standard, and this led to intense lobbying and a lot of angry, almost vitriolic criticism flowing between the two camps. It's still not the full picture of what exactly happened and why this colloquium took place and who was lobbying who and why and when hasn't been told fully yet, but basically, there was a strong lobby for the whole SADC region to abandon the commitment to the European standard and instead choose the Brazilian standard. The long and the short of it is that the politicians and the bureaucrats who were lobbied are no longer in office. Mamadupi Motlala having moved on to a new role in a consumer protection agency, and Sipiwe Nyanda having been fired by the president. We now have a new communications minister, Roy Padiachi. Now, we ascertained that DTT issue was discussed at the digital terrestrial television standard issue was discussed at the last cabinet meeting of 2010, held on the 15th of December. But curiously, the cabinet didn't issue any statement after that meeting. It did issue a statement, but the statement contained no detail of any decision or discussion around digital TV standards, which was very curious indeed. And I had a conversation with Temba Maseko, who is the spokesman for Cabinet, and he said to me at the time that the Minister of Communications, Roy Padiachi, had been empowered by Cabinet to make the announcement when he was ready, which is all very curious. Anyway, earlier this week, I spoke to one of Padiachi's advisors who told me that the Cabinet minutes actually show that Cabinet has ratified the European standard, not only the European standard, the second generation of the European standard, known as DVB-T2, and that South Africa will adopt that. So it's happening. We're going for the European standard, and the Japanese and the Brazilians have lost out in this whole process. What's curious is that there's still no official statement. Pariachi, the cabinet, no one said anything about this, except for a statement issued by from the minister's office yesterday, clearly in reaction to our news break earlier this week. I think it was on Monday or Tuesday, and the subsequent articles which appeared elsewhere in the media. It appears, Candace, you spoke to Keith Tabo, the head of this affiliation or association of black broadcasters and black equipment manufacturers, that they were lobbying quite intensely for the ISDBT, the Japanese/Brazilian standard, and this in fact may have been the original source of the suggestions that South Africa should reconsider its options. But as far as I can tell, cabinet, well, this is a fact, cabinet has endorsed and has approved the decision that we're going to go for the European standard. And I think that what may be happening now is that Pariachi is trying to placate some of these small black businesses represented by this association, NAMIC, and that he will formalize and make the announcement around DVB-T2 and the fact that we are going to adopt it sometime next week, I think.
Well, I think there's a very good reason for Pariachi to try and placate NAMIC, specifically because of the backing of several high-powered unions, the National Union of Mine Workers being one of them, and the Communication Workers Union, not as high-powered, but quite vocal.
That's a very good point.
Union. Mm. So I think at the end of the day, there is a lot of politicking that needs to happen now, and you know, it's going to be a little bit of a tough ride for him, but he needs to get the announcement out soon, regardless of what these guys are thinking.
I mean, the fact that we know it's DVB-T2, the fact that we know that we're going for the European standard, the fact that information is in the market, I don't understand why Pariachi can't just make the official announcement now and still has to wait for next week. And as you say, it's all politics, and we don't know the full detail of what's actually going on behind the scenes. And you can be sure there are a lot of unhappy people out there who the minister has to try and placate and reassure. I mean, it's an issue around. I mean, there've been suggestions from the NAMIC side that government has cabinet was not properly informed, and that in fact it's come out in favour of the commercial broadcasters and vested interests in the industry and against small black business. I think Pariachi and government generally will be very keen that perception is not the one that becomes entrenched, and that perhaps there is a way that can be found for the companies that are represented by NAMIC perhaps to be involved in the digital rollout and the move to DVB-T2. Maybe there's discussions going on at the moment about how those companies may be involved, for example, in the manufacture of set-top boxes and that sort of thing. Now, just this is all speculation, but well, I'd imagine
my source near the communication department of communications did indicate that there were some discussions around the around creating that kind of agreement or that kind of environment where those guys that are feelings burned at the moment can be included in the development of the European standard rollout.
Mm. Yeah, no, it makes sense. Anyway, we'll probably have a clearer picture next week. I would not be surprised if Minister Pariachi calls a press conference sometime next week to actually go through this all this stuff in quite a bit more detail and really explain what discussions he's been having and why.
Well, hopefully we'll be able to get some resolution soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, you'll keep an eye on Tech Central, and we'll be staying on top of the story as we have for the last year or so. Candace, we're going to take a break there. We'll be back right after these messages.
Welcome aboard Voxair Teleconferencing, where you can enjoy first-class service at a fraction of the cost, without the wait or the jet lag. Just an automated, hassle-free way to connect with people wherever they are, and all the legroom you need. It's like being there without the hassle of getting there. So why travel for business when you can simply teleconference? Call 01-0001-0001 or visit voxair.co.za. Voxair Teleconferencing, from Vox.
After the advent of the telephone, it took mankind 70 years to invent the color television. And yet, it only took the next 23 years to invent lasers, the internet, to put a man on the moon. Ignition sequence start. It begs the question, what will the business world be like in the next 23 years? Wherever your business is at, Telkom Business will be there with you. Telkom Business.
Virtual Access, ECN's latest cost-saving telecom service. Virtual Access is a single 0860 number, providing your customers with national access to your company, no matter how many branches you have or where your customers are calling from. If you are currently using or plan to use an 0860 number, you need to talk to ECN. Virtual Access is the best price single national number offering in the market. For more, visit ecntelecoms.com. ECN, lowering the cost of doing business.
Welcome back to Talk Central, the business technology podcast brought to you by the editors at techcentral.co.za. Apart from LLU and DTT, there's been quite a lot of other things happening over the Christmas period. Let's turn to a couple of the stories that broke just in that week before Christmas, in that quiet period. One of them was quite a significant appointment. Sifiso Dobengwa, the long-serving group chief operating officer of MTN, has been appointed to replace Phuthuma Nhleko, who is leaving at the end of March. It was an interesting announcement because that wasn't the only announcement that was made. I think a lot of people were anticipating Sifiso Dobengwa's appointment. He was the most logical internal candidate for that position. What wasn't expected was the announcement they made around a restructuring or change in the group structure, which has created, I think, caused a lot of confusion amongst investment analysts and people who watch MTN, because it's not quite clear what the intention is. They seem to be strengthening the MTN International business, which houses all of MTN's assets outside of South Africa. MTN International currently headquartered in Mauritius for tax reasons. They're going to be appointing a new CEO, or they're going to be creating the position of CEO for the first time of MTN International, prompting some speculation that perhaps MTN is going to have two centers of power, one centered around Sifiso Dobengwa here in Johannesburg, and one centered around the soon-to-be-appointed CEO of MTN International, who it's understood will be based in Dubai, where a lot of MTN's support and operations and technical operations have been relocated to. So interesting developments. Phuthuma Nhleko has agreed to be appointed as the deputy chairman of the group board, but also as the chairman of MTN International, which suggests he's going to continue to be quite involved, especially in the international expansion efforts of MTN. Now, Candace, this is opening up a whole lot of questions about whether MTN is effectively pulling most of its operations or its management of most of its operations out of South Africa. Is it defocusing its South Africanness? Is it becoming an international company headquartered in Dubai?
Duncan, it's an inevitability for MTN to focus more on its international business. South Africa is a saturated market. Yes, it's a good bit of the business and it does very well. But moving closer to its bigger money spinners, Nigeria and Iran, which Dubai is an ideal situation for that, it makes a lot of sense. And to become an international player, the likes of Bharti and others, then it has to become more internationally focused. Another issue for MTN though as well is to stay locally listed on the JSE as MTN Group. Every time there's a blip in the network locally, the local share price takes a dive, and international investors are looking at this going, well, where is the value for me if that's the case? So for MTN, they need to sort of really look at what their plan is and what their future of the business is, and that is definitely an international business. So it makes sense to move out to Dubai.
So the speculation that seems to be, I mean, the talk here appears to be that MTN is going to list its MTN International assets in Dubai. It certainly sounds to me like that Dubai is going to become the center of power inside MTN. And it raises really interesting questions about who's reporting to who and how the operating structure is going to work and what Sifiso Dobengwa's role is going to be and what the role of this new CEO is going to be and how they report into each other. I'm hoping that MTN is going to provide some clarity on that Now that, you know, we're heading out of the holiday season, and, you know, hopefully the Bitumen Klerk and other executives at MTN are going to communicate more fully what their thinking is around what they're planning to do here. But certainly every indication is that MTN is looking to set up a powerful hub in Dubai to manage its assets outside of South Africa. Whether that means it's going to delist from the MTN group from the JSE, I'm not so sure. I doubt that would happen in the short to medium term. Maybe it's the plan in the long term. But I mean, the other suggestion, Candice, that you've heard is that perhaps MTN will even sell its South African operation, given this has become a really mature market and the growth opportunities here are a lot less than they used to be.
Well, the information I heard was quite some time ago, and was in relation to the deal that it was in when it was in discussions with Bharti, I think that this whole process would have been accelerated if the Bharti deal had gone through. But that, as we all know, failed last year, and MTN had to get back on track and do its own work. So I think this whole process is going to be a long, slow process, and the restructuring, obviously, of a business the size of MTN is going to take some time.
Yeah.
But as you say, we do need some clarity on how the two entities will report to each other and how the businesses will integrate.
Yes. Yeah, hopefully we don't have to wait for the next set of MTN financial results, which I think are only coming out in late February, early March, to get that information. The MTN definitely needs to clarify what their intentions are with this restructuring and how they see the group functioning into the future. So let's look out for that. MTN, of course, not the only cellular company that's had some big management changes just recently. We again broke the news in December that Shamil Yusuf, the managing director of Vodacom's most important subsidiary by far, the South African operation, has been appointed by Vodacom parent Vodafone to head up Vodafone in Spain, which is a hell of a promotion for Shamil. The Spanish market is huge, and the Vodafone operation there is enormous. So kudos to Shamil for that appointment. It raises some questions about who's going to run the South African operation. I think there is quite a lot of talent inside Vodacom, so they probably can afford to find someone internally to fill that position. But it raises some interesting questions around Vodafone and its role in Vodacom. And, you know, since last year when they acquired 15% of Telkom's stake to become the controlling shareholder in Vodacom, we are starting to slowly see Vodafone exercising more control and more strategic direction, if you like, over Vodacom. And, with rumors of a rebranding coming this year, big question, you know, could Vodacom change its colors to red to match the Vodafone colors, or are they going to be a little more subtle in terms of that change? And is the plan eventually to rebrand completely and lose the Vodacom name and replace it with Vodafone? These are all questions that are up in the air, but certainly in other markets where Vodafone has taken a controlling shareholding in a cellular operator, it has rebranded as Vodafone. So just judging by that, one can assume that at some point Vodacom will become Vodafone. However, Vodacom is a very powerful brand in South Africa, built up over a period of 16, 17 years, so it's not something you just want to ditch.
Not in a hurry.
Certainly Vodacom is a more powerful brand in South Africa than Vodafone. But it's going to be an interesting year at Vodacom, and I think the real story there is going to be Vodafone's influence and what we're going to see in terms of not only corporate branding, but also perhaps strategy and also management of the organization.
It will be interesting to see how it turns out.
Good. I just wanted to touch on another story. We back to the broadcasting side of things, which we ran on Tech Central this week. Interview I had with an executive from a company called SES. I think it's pronounced SES and not SES. They're a European, Luxembourg-headquartered global satellite operator and probably the biggest competitor in the world to Intelsat. And fascinating discussion. They're expanding their South African operation, employing staff here, and all in anticipation of the launch of new satellites to serve the African market. The one that's going to be of particular interest to South Africans is a satellite called SES-5, which Well, there's two satellites going up, SES-4 and SES-5. The SES-4 satellite is going to serve French-speaking West Africa and Central Africa, and the SES-5 satellite is going to serve our market here in South Africa and other territories in Southern Africa. It's going to provide services to Top TV, the competitor to DStv, operated by MultiChoice, and is going to allow, firstly, Top TV to introduce its first high-definition channels. As you know, Candice, Top TV is planning to introduce a high-definition personal video recorder decoder later this year as well, in conjunction with the launch of those HD channels. So more competition for DStv. So things could get quite exciting on the pay TV front this year. I think Top TV still needs to get access to sports rights. I think that's a big problem for them, but certainly they're getting there in terms of the technology they're offering. And I think a lot of consumers will may consider them once they've launched their HD channels, whereas perhaps they wouldn't have considered them previously because of the fact that they just didn't offer HD.
Yeah, I think it's a must for them. They need it. We have spoken about this before. They need it. People are demanding HD now, and definitely the sports is an issue for them. But it's more exciting is the additional capacity, the satellite capacity in the.
No, it's very cool. It's very cool. We're going to have this satellite. I think has 18 transponders, whereas the Astra 4, I think it's the Astra 4A satellite, which currently serves Top TV, only had 6, so it's 3 times the capacity available from SES. And of course, Intelsat, its competitor, is always rolling out new satellite capacity as well.
No, it's good to have competition, especially in the local market, since a lot of the African countries rely quite heavily on satellite for both television and for telecommunications.
Absolutely. So let's keep an eye on that. So those satellites, as I said, the SES-4 satellite's going up in the second quarter of this year, and the SES-5 satellite, which specifically will service this part of the African continent, is going to be launched on a Proton rocket in Kazakhstan sometime in the fourth quarter of this year. So two satellites together cost €1 billion. So not chump change. This is serious business. As you say, competition is always good, and hopefully the capacity up there will perhaps even entice new pay TV operators to come into the market. I think almost time to wrap it up, but I think we can't go this week without mentioning CES in Las Vegas, the big consumer electronics trade show happening up there. Quite a few of our colleagues are up there at the moment. Aki Anastasiou, our friend from Radio 702, is there at the moment, so I'm looking forward to chatting to him when he gets back. Some really interesting developments coming out of there. For me, it's all about the tablets and the competition to the iPad. It seems that every vendor there is announcing some type of tablet, a lot of them based on Android.
It seems that way. There's almost every video I've seen or every article I've read has been about how tablet-focused it is this year. But interestingly for me, one of the more exciting ones is the Zoom tablet from Motorola, which has come out with some really fantastic hardware specs.
Yeah, and this is the first tablet that's running Android 3.0.
Yes, Honeycomb. So that's going to be quite exciting to see. It's a dual-core processor and full HD, so that's quite fun. Definitely want to get my hands on one of those and try them out this year.
And BlackBerry's also announced the Playbook 4G. I noticed the full term 4G is becoming quite popular in the US now. We've had that controversy here already. It looks like it still has to happen in the US. But the Playbook 4G also looks like a very interesting contender. So this whole tablet space is really hotting up. And I saw the demo video of the Motorola Zoom device running Android 3.0, and it looks really, really cool. Candice, I've decided I've got to get a tablet this year. I decided to hold back and not get the original Apple iPad, although by all accounts it's a great device. I decided I was going to wait for the second generation. So until, let's say, a week ago, I was really convinced that I would be getting the iPad 2. But looking at some of these toys that are coming out of CES this week, I'm not 100% sure I'll be going for the Apple product anymore. Playbook 4G looks very cool, but this Motorola Zoom running Android 3 looks super cool as well.
Well, I mean, it does 720p video that you can record, and you can view full 1080p video on the
device. Superb, and it's got a dual core processor, which I presume the iPad 2 will have as well. It's claims to be future proof for LTE, so it will support LTE in the future. Of course, LTE is the next super duper
High speed.
It's still 3G, as I understand it. but the next evolution in
wireless broadband,
absolutely. Just going to get faster and faster and faster. Good, yeah. I think let's call it there for the first episode of Talk Central for 2011. Thanks again for listening. And if you have any feedback on the show, drop us a mail. The email address is info@techcentral.co.za. From Candace Jones and myself, Duncan McLeod, we'll chat to you again next week. Bye.